Thanks, Matt. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome back. We turn now to two social justice activists who have lived and worked and comforted and fed members of their West Baltimore community for more than 50 years. Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham are the founders of Viva House. It's a place where, since 1968, more than a million people have come seeking food and shelter, maybe some help with money, or maybe just a friendly face and a warm smile. Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham have chronicled their work in a beautiful book they published a couple of years ago. It's called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way, which includes essays by Brendan and artwork by Willa. Viva House is part of a network of places around the country inspired by the Catholic Worker Movement. That movement also spawned what's come to be known as plowshares actions, in which activists around the country and elsewhere protest nuclear arms and agitate for nonviolence. On April 4th of this year, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, seven plowshares activists went on the grounds of the Kings Bay Naval Submarine Base in Camden County, Georgia, to protest the U.S. nuclear arsenal. They were arrested and they are awaiting trial. Five of the defendants have been released and ordered to wear ankle bracelets. Two of the defendants are in jail at the Glynn County Detention Center in Brunswick, Georgia. Father Steve Kelly, a Jesuit priest, is there, along with Elizabeth McAllister. She is the widow of Philip Berrigan, who was one of the Catonsville Nine. In 1973, Liz McAllister and Philip Berrigan founded Jonah House in Baltimore, another in the network of Catholic worker houses. Liz McAllister is a close friend of Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh. Willa and Brendan, it's nice to have you back. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Willa, let me start with you. What are your reflections on this 100th anniversary of the end of the war to end all wars? I mean, war is something, and violence is something you think a lot about, you pray a lot about, you work really hard in the anti-war cause. What do you think?
Well, the purpose of the Catholic Worker, and certainly the direction of our life, has been to do the works of mercy, you know, the soup kitchen, all that kind of stuff we do, and resist the works of war. So we've tried real hard to talk about nuclear weapons and disarmament. As you said, our friends are in jail now. Five of the seven are Catholic workers, young people with families. One is Dorothy Day's granddaughter. Dorothy Day is the co-founder of our movement. And she was in prison during World War I with the suffragettes. And they created quite a stir in the prison. They were put on hunger strike. They were tortured. It was a lot of publicity, and people were telling them, you know, focus on the war, not on voting. But eventually, the President Wilson, he pardoned them, and they were released from jail. And the warden was very happy. So, yes, they gave him a fit, yes. But they worked, the suffragettes, lots of suffragettes, worked very, very hard during the war. And that is enough for now.
Yeah, and human rights and civil rights, part of the anti-war effort. Brendan, you guys have always drawn a direct connection between war and poverty.
Absolutely. I have this hat on, which I use a lot. It's an anti-war veteran. And you generally do get stopped in the street, and they thank you for your service. And I said, really? Did you refuse to serve too? And then they're taken aback. And when you get into the conversation and you say, you know, let's just take Vietnam. There was no reason to be there. It was illegal, immoral, and unjust. And 58,000 Americans died and 6 million Vietnamese. So it's always a good thing. And I always wonder why we call that the service. What service is being done by the military other than killing as a service? So,
Well, and of course, people would say that, for example, the Second World War was the just war. As a matter of fact, you know, the Catholic Church had a doctrine that basically says, you know, in certain circumstances,
yes, I know,
war is justified. So how do you respond to the fact that Nazism was something that needed to be, Nazism and fascism needed to be stopped?
Well, the Catholic Worker took a stance of pacifism during the war. And many of the houses across the country closed down because people agreed with that concept that there is a just war. But Dorothy stuck with it in that no good can come from the war. no good at all, other than the waste of human life. And that produced, you know, the use of nuclear weapons, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We're the only country in the world that's ever used a nuclear weapon. And then the tremendous arms buildup from there on. And then after World War II, if you agree that it was a just war, everything after that had nothing to do with justice, and it had everything to do with greed.
And Willa Bickham, your good friend Liz McAllister, who is 78 years old, has grandchildren in Connecticut and Michigan, and is missing opportunities to see them. She feels so strongly about this that she and the other Plowshares participants in this particular action, and there have been hundreds of these actions that have taken place around the country, explain to folks what they did. They went down to Georgia at this naval base, and then what was their purpose in going there? What did they do, and what do they hope to achieve in so doing?
Their purpose certainly was to protest the nuclear submarines at Kings Bay. At all times, there's at least one submarine with nuclear weapons in the water, to go wherever need be to take care of any insurrection. So they went in and they symbolically pound on metal of the area, swords into plowshares, and wrote things on different buildings, stop war, war never again, and nuclear subs. And they were arrested. They know that they're going to get some time. And Liz, break my heart not to have her here in Baltimore. She and I painted together with a group of women for years and years. And so I miss my partner. Liz will be 79 on November 17th. I always think of her birthday. And, oh, she misses her family terribly. We're in touch with her children. And that's what she needs to do, not unlike her husband. Phil spent almost 14 years in prison. They're really, really committed, as are the other six in this group, to change the way we think.
And Brendan, Liz McAllister, like the others, had the option of accepting house arrest and wearing an ankle bracelet, but she decided not to do that. She decided to stay in the jail and conduct a prison ministry. So she's working with the other people who are there, helping them get in touch with their lawyers, writing letters for them, working to you know, give them some comfort while she's there. So it's not as if she's just sitting around twiddling her thumbs.
Oh, no. And she just she couldn't conceive of the idea of accepting house arrest. It is kind of a very difficult way to live. I think some of it's broken down a little. It's not as tight. But initially it was you wore the bracelet. You had to be in this particular house, whatever, at a specific time, all the time. And to leave and go somewhere was difficult. You had to check with everybody. So she, for that, she did not want to accept that kind of a life.
And that is also part of this incredibly strong, visceral statement that she's making about the work that she's doing. But how do you, Brendan, how do you respond to folks who say, look, this is admirable, but it's naive. This is not going to end the nuclear armament of the United States of America or Kim Jong-un in North Korea or India and Pakistan or anywhere else. That this is a lovely thing to do philosophically, but it is all symbolic. It's not actually strategic.
Well, I think I would say it's very strategic, especially in the age of Trump, because Donald Trump has threatened the use of nuclear weapons. And even to threaten the use of them is really more than just a sin. It's really an act of war to even think of the possibility of using weapons that can destroy essentially the world. It's, as they said on their statement in the Plowshare thing, that using nuclear weapons is omnicide, the destruction of everybody.
And we should mention, Willa, that the Plowshares actions are so named because of the passage from Isaiah, which says that you shall beat your swords into plowshares, changing the weapons of war into weapons or tools of agriculture. Right. And it's also very central to Catholic Worker, to the work that you all are doing, that the work at Jonah House that Liz and Phil Berrigan started, and the houses all across the country. And Liz says the following thing in an affidavit that she created for this, for the judge in this trial: to be alive enough to the suffering of people and creatures in general, and to be able to mourn, to have our eyes, ears, and hearts open to those who are suffering, and to be willing to share that suffering. Sharing the suffering is fundamental to the philosophy of Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker movement. And again, how is sharing the suffering going to, in a sort of geopolitical way, going to move the needle?
I guess you have to really believe, and I do. And there has to be some force in this world, especially in the United States today, that goes beyond hardcore politics. Voting is not enough. Voting we have to, of course, do, but we have to go on and do some spiritual-based, theologically-based action to change the hearts and minds of people.
Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh, they are the founders of Viva House in Sowebo, southwest Baltimore. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWIPR. You can follow me on Twitter at @TomHallWIPR. And you can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. Let's go to the phones to Donna in Baltimore. Donna, welcome to Midday with Brendan and Willa.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? Okay. Well, thank you for your work, all of you. I have just arrived back from San Antonio, where I attended the National Call to Action Conference.
Oh, good.
And I have a long admiration of the work of the Catholic Worker and Dorothy Day. And one of the reasons I went to, and one of the focuses on the of the Call to Action Conference, was in fact immigration and social justice for the immigrants. And so one of the things that I did whilst there was to visit the immigrants who were released from the detention centers and brought by bus to the Greyhound station. So we sat and we worked with the moms and the kids and the dads and the kids for a little while. And my big question is, with the amassing of the war apparatus at the border, how do we confront in a nonviolent way our country's scripting of this human crisis social justice issue, confront the militarization of a human justice problem that reaches back to our militarization in Central America? Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air, but thank you for your one.
Thanks for the call, Don. I appreciate it. Brendan, your response.
Well, Trump has done one thing particularly. He's called it a caravan. He refuses to recognize that these are human beings that have to get out of the places they are for any number of reasons, mostly violence and the lack of work. And so to reduce it and then make jokes about it being a caravan and then sending down troops, I think it's going to cost $220 million, who are not equipped to handle anything that has to do with just a police type of action. They're there, you know, with guns at the ready for no good reason other than to make Donald Trump feel that he is doing something to prevent people from coming into the country who need this help.
Yeah. And Willa, it stems from the perceived wisdom that not only Donald Trump and many other world leaders and even leaders throughout our country hold, that it's important for the United States to project strength. And strength seems to be, you know, synonymous with militarization. What are the proper, more morally ethical ways of projecting strength, if not the military?
Oh, certainly in our social conscience, our social justice system, we could certainly project strength through the education and employment of everybody in the United States. There's no reason in the world that we have people on the streets who are so disenfranchised that they're laying in the streets, sleeping in the streets. They come to our house. They're totally out of the society. And this is the wealthiest country in the world, and this is the way we live. Europeans often live without violence, the violence and killing. Our friends and family in Northern Ireland, they don't have guns, so maybe once every 3 years somebody will be stabbed to death, but and no homeless shelters. They have free education up through college, free health care, free bus service for the seniors. And we think we're the best in the world. Well, we can do a lot better, but our military budget is out of control. For the next 30 years, it's projected in trillions of dollars. It comes down to about $4.7 million a day to keep our budget. $4.7 million a day. Well, that's not strength. The strength is in the people.
So, Brendan, it really is, and this has been something that you've felt very strongly about and talked about for decades, about the allocation, about the priorities.
Yes.
But there are those who say to be kept safe, we have to have a military that's as big as it is, that's as powerful as it is, that's as well-equipped as it is, that it's directly related to safety.
The only way you have a safe society is everybody has enough, and people don't have more than enough. If we got rid of the concept of the 1% and everybody got what they needed, you'd have safety itself, because safety is that everybody has what they need to live and others don't just rip them off.
Let's go to the phones again. Pat in Timonium, welcome to Midday with Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to address the idea that religion seems to be join itself to the ideas of nationalism and driving patriotism. It seems to be a support of empire building to pass its message along instead of being just the opposite. And I'm wondering if you see that, for instance, with Loyola University having an ROTC program. What is that good for if you're pushing... if your whole message and the basis of your message is love and peace? How do you achieve that by training people to kill?
That's a really interesting comment, Pat. That's interesting. A Catholic university, yes. Loyola University, yes. With a pathway to military service.
Yes, it's not right. It's absolutely not right. We're talking here, Brendan and I are talking, Catholic Worker and Dorothy Day, not about institutional religion, not the institutional Catholic Church, but we abhor the ROTC program at Loyola. They're great friends of ours, but they know well that we don't want them to have that program. We've protested that.
And the Catholic Worker and its relationship to the Catholic Church. Pope Francis has said that nuclearization is a sin. Mm-hmm. He's called it that. That perhaps is as far as any Catholic pontiff has gone in the history of the church. But what is the connection between the established church as we know it, the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Worker movement, Brendan?
Well, we're not part of the established thing. In a sense, we didn't check with the diocese if we could begin. Neither did Dorothy. And they termed it the Catholic Worker, meaning Catholic in the sense that it means universal. It means open to everyone. We have our foundation in the Gospels and the prophets, and we take that as the guidelines and the leadership. We don't take when I was applying for conscientious objector in the Bronx, I was told flat out, the Catholic Church is not a peace church. And I said, really? But there's some Catholics who believe in absolute nonviolence, and they had to let me go with that one. But the idea is most people believe the Catholic Church is not a peace church, and having the ROTC on your campus is perfectly fine.
Yeah. So, Willa, we got to finish up now. But the book that you and Brendan wrote called The Long Loneliness, that's a phrase that was used by Dorothy Day. Does it get really lonely speaking the message that you speak, doing the work that you're doing, given the overwhelming opposition that people have to the philosophy that you all are espousing?
Well, the loneliness is not what I feel. I'm surrounded by family and friends, community. We have a thriving community at the house. It's the folks that we work with, our neighbors. You don't see homeless people sticking together. You ask any homeless person, come to the soup kitchen and ask, what's the hardest thing? Is it the rain, the cold weather? is it the lack of food? No, it's the loneliness. They have no support. They have nobody. And that's how often people end up on the street. Parents die. They have no family. They moved away. So the loneliness on the street is incredible. Among the poor, it's one of the hardest things.
Well, certainly so many of the poor folks in Suibo have relied on your generosity and hard work and tenacity. And we appreciate that work and appreciate your coming by today. Okay. Always good to see you.
Thank you.
Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh, they are the founders and proprietors of Viva House, which provides food and other assistance to their Suibo community on the west side here in town. The book is called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. Coming up, a conversation with the president and CEO of the United Way of Central Maryland about a new report that demonstrates that despite a strong national economy in Maryland, nearly 40% of residents have a very difficult time earning enough to cover basic necessities. We'll talk about that with Franklin Baker when we come back from a quick break. But before we take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 267 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Last week, police reported two victims of homicide in our city. They are Tracy Whiting, she was 34, and Laverne Smalls, he was 29 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is member-supported 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's number one news talk station.